We're continuing our study of Sefer Malachim Aleph, and we left off the last time we learned, which was a while ago. We left off in Perek Yud Gimel, in the middle, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, in the Art Scroll book, it's page 142. We left off really in the middle of a story. The story seems to be a post-story to the beginning of the Perek, which was a Navi, an Ish Elokim who came to Yeravam, who was in his temple that he had made in Beth El, and he was bringing Karbanos there. And so an Ish Elokim came and basically said that this place will be destroyed. The Kohanim, who are not real Kohanim, will one day be destroyed by someone from the household of David. We had said it's going to be much later in history. But it was definitely a warning to Yeravam. Said the sign that this prophecy will come true is that the Mizbeach, this altar that you're standing on, will split into two. And as Yeravam was ready to try to say, like, seize this Ish Elokim, his hand became paralyzed and he got very scared. And he asked the Ish Elokim, he asked the Navi to daven to Hashem that he should be healed. And so it happened. The next story was this Ish Elokim went on his way. Yeravam had wanted to invite him for food, but he had said, no, part of my mission is I'm not allowed to eat here. And he was continuing on his way, and another Navi, which the Mefarshim understand to be someone who was not true, a Navi Sheker, had reached out to this Ish Elokim, had invited to him to his home, had kind of told him that whatever Hashem had appeared to him and said, it's okay to come to my house. And so that's what he did. And then while he was eating there, this Navi Sheker actually got a prophecy from Hashem. The irony of it all is that he got a prophecy of Hashem to deliver to this Ish Elokim who had made a grave mistake in not following the exact words of Hashem. 100%, that basically there was a death sentence, and that he wasn't going to even reach the kever of his forefathers. So we're beginning with Pasuk Chav Gimel, which is Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayihi acharei achalo lechem, it was after the meal finished, after they finished eating bread. Vacharei shoso, and after he drank. Vayichavosh lo hachamor, lanavi asher heshivu. He saddled the donkey for the Navi that he brought back, meaning the host, the individual who was the Navi Sheker. He was the one who saddled the donkey for this Ish Elokim to go on his way. Again, perhaps he doesn't exactly know when this dire prophecy is going to admit. I mean, the prophecy sounded like it was going to happen pretty soon, but we don't really hear, first of all, we don't hear the reaction of the Ish Elokim, which maybe can be seen in a positive light, meaning he realized his mistake. Hashem had, through Nevuah, had told him what his punishment is going to be, and he accepted it. Now, we never know. We're not given, we don't know every piece of conversation that happened, but we don't hear his response at all, and it seems to be more on the line of silence acceptance. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Vayelech, so this Ish Elokim went, Vayim Tsa'ehu Aryeh Baderech Vayimisehu. And it doesn't seem that it takes so long. A lion finds him on the road and kills him. How common lions would be, I have no idea. But it definitely, this is the beginning of something supernatural. This experience with the lion, every step in the way seems to be supernatural, and maybe even the fact that, you know, again, it's ancient Judea, it's somewhere in the north because it's the northern kingdom. How many lions are around that they could just find a person? We don't know. Vatihi nivlaso mushlechas baderech, and it was that the body of this Ish Elokim was kind of thrown onto the ground. Vachamor omed etzla, the donkey stood next to the body, meaning he was probably riding on a donkey. Va'arye omed etz al nevela, and the lion stood next to the body. But there is, as we're going to see throughout this, you know, horrible story, you would not expect the chamor to be standing there. You would expect, if this lion is some devourous lion, that the lion is going to go after the chamor, that the lion and that the Aryeh would not be omed etzah hanavela if the lion is there to consume what a lion is normally there to do. So the lion wouldn't just be standing there. There would be some aspect of it's hard to talk about, but it would be eating the ish elokim. So this the mafarshim understand to be either the idea that the miracle is to represent the fact that this was not this was meant to carry out a specific punishment to the ish elokim, and it wasn't meant any. This is not a natural occurrence. So the donkey should be standing right there. The donkey shouldn't be consumed, and the body of the ish elokim shouldn't necessarily be consumed by that. That's not part of the punishment. The punishment is that he is killed, and he's killed before he gets back to his family's burial place. We're actually going to see that he never actually gets buried in his family's resting place. The Radak in his commentary thinks that to some degree it's a lesson of the level of punishment that this Ish Elokim was going to get. He wasn't supposed to be punished more than this, that his body should be consumed. And the Radak even mentions an idea that the chamor, the fact that this donkey was a donkey that served a Navi, an Ish Elokim, so the donkey was also saved. The donkey received some type of, again, an Olam Hazeh type of reward, that he wasn't killed. We know the donkeys aren't they're not commanded in things, so they can't really get reward, but the Radak mentioned some idea that since this donkey served Ish Elokim, the donkey itself was spared. But this is, you have to imagine that this is not, the phenomena is not just that this Ish Elokim was killed on the road, but anyone who saw this, either from afar or afterwards, they have to be taken by the sight of the lion standing there and the donkey standing there. Pasuk Hafei, v'hinei anashim, over him, there were people who just kind of passed by. Vayiras anavela, and they saw the dead body. Mushlachas badera, kind of thrown there on the road. Ve'es ha'aryeh omed etzah anavela, they take note of the lion just standing there by the body. Vayavo vayidabru va'ir, they came and they spoke in the city. They spoke in the city, asher hanavi hazakein yosheba. It was probably the closest town. Meaning when this Ish Elokim was hosted by the Navi Zakein, who's the Navi Sheker, the false prophet, and then the Pasuk makes it sound like he left the city, and then he was Vayelach, right, in Pasuk Chavdal, it says he went, and he was, and the lion found him. So it's probably the closest. There's no indication that these men who saw this occurrence came back to the city in order to tell the Navi Sheker anything. It's just that they came into town, and you have to imagine that's the talk of the, what we'd say is the talk of the town. People talk about, when they, right, why is it that when they when you travel on the highway and there's so much traffic, it's usually not because of the accident. It's because everybody's looking at the accident. And on the other side of the road, everyone's looking. They're looking, and then they go to the office, and like, you'll never guess what I saw on the side of the highway. So the people are looking, people are talking. So just by hearsay, Pasuk Chavav, Vayishma HaNavi, the original host, the Navi Sheker, he hears, Vayishma HaNavi, Asher Hishivu Min HaDerech, the one who had brought him back, right, had heard, Vayomer Ish Elokim, who he said to himself, it must be the Ish Elokim, Asher Mares Pi Hashem, who, right, language of Mara, is a Merirus, that's a language of rebellion. He rebelled against Hashem because there was that one aspect of not sticking around the area where Yeravim was, not eating and benefiting. There were a number of instructions. It was not to eat. It was not to take the same road that you took to get to Yeravim. Take that road back. There was just an idea of trying to distance oneself from the Avodah Zarah that existed there. So it must be him. He's the one who rebelled against Hashem. Vayitnehu Hashem la'aryeh, Hashem gave him over to the lion. Vayishberehu, it broke him. Vayimisehu, and it caused him to die. Kedavar Hashem Asher Diberlo, like that which Hashem had spoke to him. This phrase of him internal the Navi Sheker internalizing that what happened was Kidvar Hashem, I believe it's this phrase that gives us a window into why this story is here. Why is this story important? I mean, it's a tragic story, but how does it relate back? Here we're talking, right? We start the parak with very big focusing on the nation, focusing on Yerubbaal, focusing on this new center of religious activity, and how there's a prophecy that it's going to be destroyed, how the priests are going to be destroyed, how someone from the Malchus based David is eventually going to kind of reclaim this area, or at least take care of this affront to God. And now we're on this like side story of an Ish Elokim that made a mistake and needs to be punished because he made a mistake. And an Ish Elokim is punished on a higher level than maybe a Navi is punished on a higher level for making a small infraction. But it boils down to not listening to the Dvar Hashem. But the fact that this was a prophecy that went ahead and Hashem said he's going to be punished and it came true, so too that informs Yerubbaal. Somehow that can get back to Yerubbaal. It informs that Nevuah is something that happens. Nevuah is true, and that God will mete out a punishment. And if God is going to punish this Ish Elokim, imagine what He's going to do to Yerubbaal ben Nevat, to these false Kohanim who serve in the temple, the temple in Beis El, the temple of Avodah Zarah. So that's perhaps giving us a little bit of a clue, and where that thought will be echoed again. So Pasuk of Zion. So this Navi Sheker, Vayidaber al Banav Lemor, he speaks to his sons, saying, Chivshu li esachamor, Vayachavoshu. Saddle me up my donkey, and they saddled up his donkey. It's the kind of, we keep calling him a Navi Sheker, and we keep, you know, we kind of paint him in a bad light, but the comparison is that when it came for him to send away his guest, he saddled the donkey himself. He went ahead and put him, but when he went out on his own, so then he had his kids do it. So it definitely showed there was something positive in his, when he sent forth his guest, he did it. And when he was going out for himself, he had his children do it. Pasuk Chavches. Vayelech, he went, Vayimses nivlaso mushlechas baderech, he found the body thrown on the road. Vachamor, va'aryeh, he found the donkey, he found the lion, om demeitzal anavela, just standing there. Lo ochal ha'aryeh es anavela, so the Tanakh is kind of sending home this message, that the aryeh did not consume anything, v'lo shavar as chamor, and it didn't break the chamor. This goes against all, I mean, you know, I don't mean to make like a light of it, but like, in the zoo, they don't keep the donkeys and the lions in the same cage. It goes, if they did that, there would be no more donkeys. It goes against nature, and the Tanakh is clearly presenting as that. And he sees, and the fact that the Aryeh is still there, the animals haven't left. Why haven't the animals run away from, it would be natural for them to run away from the scene. At least the Aryeh, maybe even the Chamor, it's that because as long as the body is standing there, so it adds to the scene. This is the scene of the Ish Elokim being punished. So Pasuk Chavtes, Vayisa Hanavi es Nivlas Ish Elokim. So the Navi Sheker, who was the host, and you know maybe even caused all of this, he took the he lifted up the body of the Ish Elokim, Vayanicheo al Chamor, he placed it on the donkey, Vayishivehu, and returned back to his own town. Vayishivehu, he returned him. Vayavo el ir, he came to the city. Vayavo el ir hanavi hazaken, he came to the city. It's in third person, but it's he came to his own city. He came to the city of where the meal had happened. Lisbod ulakavro, to go ahead and give hespe, to give eulogy ulakavro, and to bury the Ish Elokim. Kind of taking, you know, no one gave him rishus, no one gave him permission to bury the Ish Elokim here, as opposed to back in his home. Why that's allowed? So we see it. It was part of the prophecy was that he wasn't going to be given that merit to be buried by kiv by kever avos. That there is a concept throughout Tanakh about being buried in by kivrei avos, by familial burial places, and that was a privilege that was not going to be granted to this Ish Elokim. And this Navi Sheker makes the decision, right? Ulakavro, he's going to bury him here in this unnamed town, the ear of the Navi Azakin. Pasuk Lamed. Vayanach es nivlaso bekivro, he placed the body in a burial place. Vayisbedu alav, and he eulogized him, saying, Ho, hoi, achi, alas, my brother, woe, my brother, he's so sad. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayihi acharei kvaro oso. After he completed the burial, Vayomer el banav lemor, he said, this Navi Sheker said to his sons as follows, giving a form of a will, B'mosi, with my death, Ukvartem osi bakever asher ish elokim kover bo. Bury me right next to. Bury me in the same place that this ish elokim is buried. Eitzel atzmosav, hanichu es atzmosai, next to his bones should be placed my bones, which may be a reference to, I imagine you may have been on a tour in Eretz Yisrael where they take you to these they have found family burial places from the time of the Tanaim and even earlier. They had two stages of burial where they would bury the body and then they would gather the bones at a later date and put them in another location. So that maybe right, he's saying both points. Ukvartem osi bekever asher eshalukim kavrbo, and then etzal atzmosav hanichu es atzmosai. He wants to be buried right next to this individual, and he has a specific reason. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Ki hayo yiyeh hadavar asher kara bedvar Hashem al hamizbeach asher bebeis el. Because the matter that God spoke about when Hashem called out against the mizbeach that's in Beis El, it's going to happen. It's going to come true. It's going to come true, and there's going to be, right, this is the where Yeravim built near Beis El, where he built the temple. It's going to be destroyed. The Kohanim are going to be killed. And there's even going to be an aspect of desecrating the bodies of those false priests that had lived throughout the years. But he's thinking to himself that if I'm buried next to a tzaddik, next to an Ish Elokim, who, yes, made a mistake but was punished in this world and is receiving reward in the next world, so then I'll be safe. I won't have... If I went around the table, I don't think we want this guy to win. We don't like this guy. It was his fault, kind of. He listen, at the end of the day, Ish Elokim made a decision. But this Navi Sheker, but it worked. The Navi Sheker dies eventually. He's buried next to this individual. And hundreds of years later, when Yoshiyahu from Malchus Beis David comes and destroys the house of Avodah Zarah and gets rid of the Kohanim, the Tanakh makes note of this. He knew that there was a kever of an Ish Elokim, and he left it alone. He left it alone out of respect. So he says, right, the Pasuk is saying, I know this prophecy is going to come true. The prophecy that was Al HaMizbeach Asher Beis El, V'al kol batei habamos, all of the houses of the abamos, all of the private mizbechos, asher ba'ari shomron, that were in the cities of Shomron. Some of Farshim here, make note of the fact that this is the first time we hear about the city of Shomron, the cities of Shomron. The Shomron, specifically, we sometimes refer to the Shomron as a region, right, Yehuda v'Shomron, but there was a city called Shomron, which eventually, more than 3 decades from this point in the history of the Northern Kingdom, it does become the capital city of the Northern Kingdom, of the Malchus Yisrael. Right now it's not. Right now it doesn't exist. And so there may be some aspect, even though this was a Navi Sheker, there may be some aspect that he was not necessarily saying Nevuah, but that he was... he was saying something that was going to come, and that at the end, when the person from Malchus Beis David is going to come and take the quote unquote revenge for Hashem against this all these bamos, all these private mizbechos, it's not only going to happen in Beis El, but it's also going to happen in Shomron, because that's where future centers of the Malchus Yisrael is going to be.
Does a Nevi Sheker generally get a nevuah from Hashem at some point, or?
So what, one of the explanations we saw, I think we mentioned it, was that it was almost like a disgrace to the Navi. To the Ish Elokim, who had broken the word, the fact that he needs to receive the prophecy about his own punishment from a Navi Sheker, that's like
a dig.
But presumably he wasn't deserving of it in his own right. Mm-hmm. In Pasuk Lamed Gimel, we circle back to Yeravam. Achar hadavar hazeh, after this matter, which Rashi tells us is this whole story of the Ish Elokim with the Navi Sheker. This was a story that was meant as a message as well, meaning on the micro scale, it was a punishment for the Ish Elokim. But on a macro scale, it was there to send a message to Yeravam, that Yeravam was supposed to take note of all these things that happened, that the real Navi broke the Dvar Hashem, was punished for breaking the Dvar Hashem. The whole aspect of the animals, of the chamor and the aryeh not doing more, kind of being unnatural. And the fact that in Yeravam's mind was also supposed to be the idea that he saw the Mizbeach that he was standing on break in half. He saw his own hand become paralyzed. He saw the Ish Elokim daven for him to get better, and he actually got better. It was after all of this, and the pasuk continues, Lo shav Yeravam midar kohara. Yeravam did not change. He didn't return. He didn't do tshuva from his evil ways. Vayasha vayas miktsos ha'am kohane bamos. He returned and he made more groups of people into kohanim of these bamos. Again, every time you have this mentioning of non-kohanim being able to have this position of religious leadership, so that it's a flag of you don't have to be born into the position. That is Yeravam's whole, that's his ticket. His ticket is he wasn't born into the position. He was given the right to be king by God. He seems to kind of bracket off the by God part because now he's off the God path. But that you don't have to be from the Malchus Beis David to be king. So you don't have to be from the Bnei Aaron to be a priest. Right? Vayas miktosa am kohane bamos hechafetz yamale es yado. Whoever he desired, whoever he wanted, he went ahead and filled their spots. Vayihi kohane abamos, they were these kohanim. Rashi on the phrase achar hadavar hazeh, which is the opening phrase of this pasuk. So Rashi quotes a different story that the Gemara quotes, that Hashem had grabbed onto the clothing of Yeravam and said to Yeravam, "Do tshuva, and va'ani va'ata uben Yishai nitayel began Eden. I and you and Ben Yishai," which is a reference to David, "will be able to walk in Gan Eden." That there's an ability for you to come back. But that wasn't good enough. That wasn't good enough for Yeravam, and that he didn't want to have any association with the Malchus Beis David, and so he makes this decision not to come back at all. And it ends up being kind of an ultimate choice that he makes for himself and his entire dynasty, as we're about to see at least an opening and then a detailed story. Pasuk Lamed Dalet, which is the last pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel. Vayhi badavar hazeh, it was in this matter, l'chatas beis Yeravam, that this became the sin of the entire household or dynasty of Yeravam, ulahachid, ulahashmid, that there would need to be a need to hachid, hashmid, me'al pnei adama. Hachid, the Mitzvah Sion tells us, means to destroy or cut off, and hashmid is also a language of of destroying. The languages that the Metzudot Sion uses is lahachris and kilyon. Kilyon is to totally, right? The word vayichal means to finish. So it could be kala, it could mean to destroy. That we see that right, when something could be destroyed to the extent there's nothing left, it's a double language, me'al pnei adama, from on the earth. So this is where the Gemara and the Mishnayos in Sanhedrin actually list Yeravim as one of the individuals that not only was he punished in this world, but he was punished in the next world. That he lost, there were a number of kings that didn't have a portion in the world to come, and that was Yeravim. So that's seen from the double language of Lachid and Lahashmid. Fine. Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Aleph. Bo'esahi, it was at that time, sometime, you have to, again, we're not told most of these prakim, we're not told on the exact timeline of the monarchy. Bo'esahi chala Avia ben Yeravam. One of Yeravam's children, named Avia, became sick. Vayom Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Yeravam Leishto, and Yeravam said to his wife, presumably the mother of Avia, we're not told her name, Kumina, arise now, get up, Vihishtanis, Mr. Sion says, is Milashon Shinui, kind of like disguise yourself, put on a costume. Velo yedu ki at eshes Yeravam, so that they will not know that you are the wife of Yeravam. We'll have to discuss who the they is. Vahalach to Shiloh. Go to the city of Shiloh. The city of Shiloh, I don't believe we've heard about in a long time. The city of Shiloh was where the Mishkan was for 369 years. It was destroyed in the fourth parak of Shmuel. It didn't actually say it, but the Mefarshim understand based on the Psukim that the city was destroyed. The Mishkan had to move. It was never again in Shiloh. I don't think we've heard of Shiloh since then. Apparently, Shiloh had some comeback. And v'halach to Shiloh, go to the city of Shiloh. Hinei sham Achia Hanavi. There is Achia the prophet. Achia is Achia Shiloni, who we saw before. That's his name. Shiloni. Comes from Shiloh. Who diber alai lemelech alamazeh? He was the one who spoke to me, who spoke about becoming king of this nation. So go seek his counsel. Pasuk had mentioned that he tells her to dress up because he doesn't want it to be recognized that he's the wife of Yeravam. That she's the wife of Yerav. So who is he trying to fool? So option number one is that he's actually trying to fool Achia, which is just bizarre, because if you're a Navi and you're going to be able to know the future and things of that nature, you can probably know what's behind a mask or a disguise. But if that's the approach, maybe he thought that at least initially they would have a conversation and he would be sending her to find out what's going to happen with this son, and that Achia would treat her as just a regular person, not as the queen of a king that's deserving of punishment. And maybe he's trying to avoid the Navi kind of calling him out for his bad deeds, which is just interesting when you think about, because that means he recognizes that he has something to hide. But he's not willing to, go over that hurdle and actually do tshuva. Meaning, so it's he's kind of stuck. The other idea that the Rishonim talk about is v'lo yedu. It is. It sounds like it's in plural. V'lo yedu. He doesn't want. Could you imagine? He already knows how you square this away, that he's an oved avodah zarah. But when he wants to know the truth, he seeks out God. But he doesn't want the people to know that. He doesn't want his servants to think, when times get rough, try to find a Navi Emes. No, he wants, when times get rough, go to these private Mizbechos and find the false Kohanim and find the false prophets. So, it's... he does not seem to be a sincere person. It's kind of high, both of these pshatim are highlighting his lack of sincerity and his lack of willingness to own the situation and to, you know, A, do tshuva, and B, recognize that his role in history could have been so much more unique. That there was a much bigger picture, that Klal Yisrael had to break into 10 tribes and 2 tribes as a punishment to Shlomo and a punishment to the dynasty of the household of David. But it could have been a brother-sister kingdom. It could have been, there could have been peace. There could have been Jews who visit Yerushalayim and then come back to the northern kingdom. And we'll see some hints to this, you know, it's like his haughtiness gets the better of him, and he's not willing to do what's right. Pasuk Gimel, he tells her, you need to go to Shiloh, you need to meet up with Achia. V'lakach tibiyadeich, you should take in your hands, asara lechem, you should take 10 loaves of bread. V'nikudim, you should take nikudim, which I don't think we've seen this before. Feel free to speak up if you remember, or, you know, a homework assignment if you want to come back next time. What are nikudim? Article says wafers. What do you got?
Biscuits.
I like that. Biscuits, wafers. The Mitzvah Sion says it's a pas yavesh. It's some type of dried bread that has spices. I don't know. Cracker, biscuit, wafer. They're all good. It's different than lechem, and this is part of the gift. Ubakbuk devash. A bakbuk of devash. Which I think when we read the word bakbuk, we all know what a bakbuk is. Right? It's still used today in modern Hebrew.
Bakbuk.
Yeah. So all the mafarshim, or at least the Mitzvah Tzion, and then the Radak, they're all like defining the word like it's something new for us. The Mitzvah Tzion says it's a kli shepiv tzar. It's a vessel that has a narrow opening.
Like a cot.
A cot. It says actually here, cot.
Does it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It seems to be different than other containers. Why? I have no idea. Maybe the Das Mikra says something. I don't know. This is not the first time. Basically, they're putting together a gift that when you go to the Ish Elokim, you're supposed to bring a gift. It's something that we saw in Sefer Shmuel when Shaul and his attendant come up with the idea to go visit Shmuel to find out where the missing donkeys are. His father lost donkeys, and they were looking for them. So they're like putting their hands in their pockets. We don't have a gift. We have to bring. You're supposed to bring a gift. It's not. It seems to be that it's just like, I don't know if it's Derech Eretz. It's not like a charge. It's not like admission. You know, but it's like Lahavdil, because we're talking about Nevi'im, Lahavdil, I don't go to many Hasidish Rebbes, but I think you're supposed to, like, when you go to give a kvittel with the piece of paper that has your name, I think you're also supposed to give an envelope or something. Yes. It's not that, right, it's not like you're not buying, listen, I'm not a Rebbe, you're not buying the bracha or, like, you know, depending on what's in the check, you're going, I mean, I heard the most amazing story about the Tusha Rebbe, that he once had, people were waiting online to meet him, and he saw the line, and he saw, standing in the line, he saw a very poor person, and a couple of spots after that poor person, he saw a very wealthy person. And he realized the poor person's probably going to come in, and he's going to be asking for money, but the Tusha Rebbe used to, basically any money he had, he gave out. And he realized that moment, he has nothing. So when the door opened and it was about to be the poor person's turn, he called in the rich person first to kind of cut the line. And he called in the rich person and the rich person went ahead and gave him an envelope with money inside, or the check inside, and he gave it to the Rebbe closed. The poor person comes in, and the poor person starts complaining, how, you know, I have all respect for the Rebbe, but how is it that you took me last, and you didn't give me the respect that I deserve. I know I'm poor, but so the Rebbe didn't say anything. He just accepted the criticism, and he gave him the envelope. Gave him the envelope, and then the story goes on. It's a good story, so I might use it one day in a bigger room. But the yeah, exactly. So the story goes on that this poor person was waiting for a ride, to hitch a ride. I've never been there, but it sounds like it's like New Square, where it's like their own little community off to the side. So they were trying to get it. He was hitching a ride into Montreal, which is the big city up there. And so the rich person from the story was the driver. And I don't know how the story happened, but it's a good story, so it must have happened this way. The poor person hadn't opened the envelope yet. And he opened the envelope in the car, and the check was made out in English, and he didn't read English. He knew Yiddish, he knew French. He didn't know English. Yes. So he asked the driver, "Can you read this to me?" And the driver sees that it's his own check, and it was a 5-digit check. And he read it to him, and he didn't say anything. The rich person went back to the Rebbe and said, "You know, I understand that the Rebbe does whatever the Rebbe does, but how did the Rebbe not even open the check?" He said, "It's very simple. This person was poor, you are rich, and I was supposed to, he needed the money, you are giving the money. It doesn't make a difference what the numbers were." So again, Rebbes take money, but again, circling back here, I don't know what they do with it. It's not a charge. It can't be. But this is something that's happened in Tanakh before, that when you're going to see a Navi, that you bring a gift. The Mefarshim seem to explain that this is a modest gift. Because again, she's on this secret mission. She doesn't want him to know that she is the wife of Yerov. Now, the wife of Yerov should come with a gift that's, you know, like Yaakov sent to Esav. It should be a great gift. So it's a modest gift. My question is, why are there new things? Why is it say Nikudim? Why does it talk about a Bakbuk Devash? Why is it different language than we've had in the past? So I think the question is better than the answer that I'm going to give you. And maybe you could think of your own answer or offer one, come back with one. But maybe it's a sign of the fact that we have actually changed regions, meaning we're no longer in the Malchus based Dagon. We're no longer in the Southern Kingdom. We're now in a different place. And in a different place, there might just be different norms. There may just be different, quote-unquote, delicacies. That Nikudim, these crackers, biscuits, wafers, whatever they are, maybe that's just the going snack in the, you know, it's the energy bar or whatever is in today of that time. Bakbuk Devash, that's what they used over there. I mean, I'm not giving like a simple answer, but we're not used to the term because we haven't been focused necessarily in these places. So he says to her, right, this is the directions. You're supposed to take this with you. Uvas Elav, you will come to him, meaning the Ish Elokim. Hu Yagid Lach, he will tell you. Mayelanar, what will be with the young boy, with the nar. When we were told that his son Avia became ill, so it just says that he's a ben, and now we hear that he is a nar. In Tanakh, up until now, we have seen the term nar can refer to someone who's quite old. An older teenager. Yosef is 17 years old, and he's described as a nar. This is not a young child, and we're actually going to see based on the Torah, based on some of the Midrashim comments in the Gemara and the Medrash, that this Avia actually had quite an active life up until this point, and had even done some very some good things in his life. Obviously, he had also been quite influenced by growing up in his father's house, like the rest of his house. So now we know he's a nar. So you figure he's a teenager. Pasuk Dalet. So that was the instructions, and now comes the going to do the mission. Vataz kein eshes Yeravam. So the wife of Yeravam did exactly that. She got up, she went to Shiloh. She came to the household of Achia. The Achiyahu. In Tanakh, we see it's interchangeable. Sometimes refer to someone like Yirmiyah, Yirmiyahu, Yishayah, Yishayahu, Achiyah, Achiyahu. I'm sure there has to be some like great study of Tanakh as to how to explain that on a deeper level than the way I am right now. We have to be told, V'Achiyahu, lo yachal liros. He wasn't able to see. Ki kamu einav misevo, his eyesight had stopped. Ki kamu einav, his eyes had kind of like stood still, misevo, from his old age. Again, we don't know the timeline, how many years it's been since he had that interaction with Yeravam, telling him that he's going to become the king. You could ask the question, as some mefarshim do, you know, why does she need the disguise if he's blind? So answer number one is maybe Yeravam doesn't know that. And the other is that usually, specifically an Ish Elokim, a Navi who's blind, so you have to imagine that he has some helpers. He has some gabayim, right? If we're talking about like a rebbe, he probably has like a household, he has attendants, so they're going to know. And they would announce, the so-and-so is here, the queen of Malchus Yisrael is here. You know, there still is, halachically, Yeravam had the status of being a king. And there still is an idea, even though he was a king that worshipped Avodah Zarah, and is a king that has prophecies coming his way about a downfall, but while he's still king, there are requirements to treat him with respect. So his wife would also, meaning there would have to be treating of the queen with respect. But that was against what Yeravam wanted. Yeravam wanted this to be kind of on the down low, that, you know, just to be a mother there for the nar, to find out what's going to happen. So even if Achia couldn't see, everyone else would be able to see. So she still has to stay within her disguise. Pasuk Hey, Vahashem Amar El Achiyahu. So as she is traveling to Shiloh, or as she comes to the house of Achiyah, Hashem says to Achiyahu, Hinei eshes Yeravam ba lidrosh davar meimcha el bena kicholahu. Behold, the wife of Yeravam is coming to seek out something from you in terms of her son who's currently sick. Chazo v'chazeh tedaber eleha. This and this is what you're supposed to speak to her. Vayihi kevoa. And by the way, when she comes, vihi misnakera. She's going to be misnakera. What is misnakera? So, the Rashi says, ki ilu eina zos. As if she is not her. The Radak understands the word because the shorish of the word sounds like haker, which is to recognize. So this, I don't know the grammar of it, but misnakera, it's the Radak says hefach hakar. It's the opposite of recognizing. So he's letting Achiyah know. Hashem is letting Achiyah know a lot of information. Number one, who she is. Number two, why she's coming. Number three, I am telling you exactly what to tell her, which is going to be a lot more than just the be a lot more than she bargained for. It's going to be a lot more than what she was looking for in terms of the finding out what's happening to the nar. And finally, he says, by the way, she's trying to hide herself. Hashem feels like that's an important piece of information for Achiyah to know, for how Achiyah is going to address her. That he knows everything. When you know the pasuk is kind of presenting it like this prophecy happened immediately, because it's a previous pasuk says Vatavo Beis Achiyah, she came there and he wasn't able to see. Most likely, it's hard to understand that it was simultaneous. It has to happen before. Prophecy outside of Moshe Rabbeinu, so it's always explained thus, the prophecy happens during some type of sleep state. So Achiyah receives this nevuah in some type of sleep state, probably as she's en route, and the pasuk is presenting to us kind of, you know, her perspective. It finishes her perspective of she was given the command by her husband to go. She goes and she's arrived. And then we pick up the story from Achiyah's perspective that Hashem gave him the heads up in terms of her coming and what exactly to say. Pasuk Vav. Vayikishma Achiyahu es kol ragleha ba Pesach. Now we're hearing it active. It was when Achia heard her footsteps at the door. Vayomer, he said, Boi Eshes Yeravam, come in, O wife of Yeravam. Lamoza at Misnakera, why are you disguising yourself? Va'anochi shaluach elayich kasha. I am have a harsh message to give to you. Right? Rashi says this phrase of shaluach elayich me'esa kadosh baruch hu b'shlichas kasha. I have a mission to tell you something. So you have to imagine that she's caught totally off guard. She thinks she's all disguised. She's at least going to be able to open her mouth and say, "Hello, my name is Mary." But probably not that, but Miriam, whatever. So, but she doesn't have a chance. And maybe it's clear that he can't even, like, maybe she sees him and it's clear that he's blind. And all of a sudden she's like, probably, you know, she didn't bargain for this. She agreed to this mission because her husband asked her to, and it had to do with the nar, and she clearly cares about the nar. But now I have this harsh message to tell you. Pazik Zion. Lechi Imri LeYeravam. You should go and tell Yeravam. I mean, what I'm about to tell you is not only for you. It's really a message to Yeravam. Obviously, it relates to you as his wife. Ko Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So has said Hashem, the God of Israel, which is the classic introduction for prophecy. So here is Achiah, who is a Navi, giving over prophecy to the king via his queen. Ya'an asher harimoscha mitocha am. Because that you were harimoscha, that you were lifted mitocha am from amongst the nation, the etencha nagid alami Israel, and I placed you as a nagid, I placed you as a ruler over my people Israel. Right? The basic gist is going to be, I, God, did great for you, I made you king, and this is how you treated me. The harimoscha mitocha am, so there's a hidden message that out of all 11 tribes, you know, the king had to be chosen from outside of the tribe of Yehuda. It had to be chosen from someone else. But there were 11 other tribes to choose from. It did not have to be the tribe of Ephraim. And even if you wanted to say that somehow we're tapping into the, you know, there were leadership qualities of Yehuda that somehow get passed down to David and Malchus based David, and there were leadership qualities to Yosef, and that to Yosef goes down to Ephraim. It could be Menashe. Menashe was also from the tribe of Yosef. Harimoscha mitocha am has this hidden idea that literally there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who could have been chosen as the king, and yet it was you. Harimoscha, I lifted you mitocha am. It could have been anyone. Which, number one, there has to be an appreciation that you were chosen, and number two, is there's a hidden message of you were deserving of it. You have to be. Why would he pick? Why would Hashem pick Yeravam? The etencha nagid. So I didn't see anyone say this here, but in the past in Tanakh we have multiple ways to refer to a ruler. We have a melech, and we have a nagid. A melech means a king. A nagid means a ruler. A nagid usually refers to someone who's not going to last, someone not necessarily a dynastic rule. And maybe there's some hidden meaning here, that tencha nagid, that maybe Yeravam didn't have the ability for it to keep going. I don't know. Pasuches, ve'akra es ha'mamlocha mi'beis David, and I, Hashem, right, I picked you, I chose you, and I tore away the monarchy from the household of David, at least 10/12, the enalach, and I gave it to you. So that's what I did. Now you, the lohayisa ke'avdi David, you are not like my servant David, asher shamar mitzvos, who kept my mitzvos, v'asher halach acharai b'cholavavo, and who went after me with all of his heart, lasos rak hayasher b'inai, to do what was just in my eyes, And in brackets, we're thinking, why is he mentioning David? So you have to remember what Yeravam was told by Achiah the first time was that a message that really, it should have almost been the all the tribes should have been given over to you, and it should have been during the lifetime of Shlomo, but because of David, Hashem says, because of David, I'm going to keep one tribe, which is really two tribes, in the southern kingdom. And because of David, it's not going to happen during the lifetime of Shlomo, but it's only going to happen during the lifetime of his son. It's all because of David. When Yeravam was chosen as king, it was along with the message of how righteous David was in the eyes of Hashem, that Hashem was willing to reform how he was punishing Shlomo only because of David. So you didn't measure up to David, who was, in God's eyes, the chosen leader. And we know, in parentheses, that David had his ups and his downs, but that since David did tshuva, the way that this nevuah, again, decades later, you know, maybe 50 years after David's on this earth, David is described as someone who did rak hayasher be'enai, only that which was just, because he was the ultimate bal tshuva. Pasuk tes. Vatara la'asos, you did evil. Mikol asher hayu lefanecha, from anyone who was before you. You've been like the most evil person. So clearly here we're going past just kings, because there've only been very few Jewish kings. There was Shaul, there was David, there was Shlomo. I was like, to be worse than that, you know, that's kind of a tall order. Because even in the criticism that we had, that Chazal have of Shlomo, it's not that we kept pointing out, it's not that Shlomo did it, it was just that he allowed, and to measure up against David, and even Shaul, who made the errors that he made, but it seems that we're going much more broad. You've been worse than anyone who comes before you. Now, what it doesn't say is that you're worse than anyone that comes after you. Because unfortunately, the unraveling of the Malchus Yisrael, which we're beginning to see here, it sounds crazy to say it, and each time you're not going to believe when you read the Tanakh, where it says, like, you're the worst ever. And then, like, you're the worst ever. Like, you know, I'm always critical, like Lahavza, I'm critical. There's a radio show that they open up the show every day, back and better than ever. You can't open up the radio show every day back and better than that. It has to be that some days was not better than yesterday. But he does say that the Nevuah is saying you're worse than anyone who came before you. Vatelech, and you went, Vatasecha Elohim Achirim, you made other gods, Umasechos, and molten images, specifically Lahachiseini, to anger me. To anger Hashem, v'osi hishlachta acharei gavecha, v'osi hishlachta, right? And you threw me down acharei gavecha, behind your back. After your back, meaning behind your back. Now, it doesn't appear from Yeravam that was his motivation. It doesn't appear from the building of setting up the city of Dan and the city of Beit El as centers of, you know, religion, it seemed to be the motivation was to make sure the Jews wouldn't visit Yerushalayim. And that originally his idea was to make those calves, to make the cows, the golden cows, as ways to worship Hashem through this. The message, though, is that when it comes, when something is close to Avodah Zarah, or getting on the path to Avodah Zarah, once it reaches Avodah Zarah, the bottom line is it's the ultimate affront to God. And that's where God understands it as Lahachi Seini, to anger me, and to you know, the depiction of Osi Hishlachta, to throw God down onto the ground. Acharei Gavecha, after your back. So the Gemara learns Acharei Gavecha is close to the word Geecha, which means your haughtiness. That the root cause, another hint that we've mentioned before, that Yeravim's root cause was his haughtiness, this idea that he can't share the power, he can't let his subjects visit Yerushalayim. It's something that he He couldn't overcome his own haughtiness, and that ended up getting in the way, and it ended up not only taking himself down, but it ends up taking down everyone around him. Pasuk Yud. Lachain. So that's right. So the Navi presents what Hashem did to Achia, what Hashem did to Yeravam, and now what Yeravam did back to Hashem. Lachain, therefore. Hinani mevi ra el beis Yeravam. Behold, I'm going to bring evil against the entire household of Yeravam. V'hichrati l'Yeravam mashtin bikir. I am going to cut off from Yeravam all those who are mashtin bikir. The art scroll is nice, where it writes, I shall eliminate every male offspring. That's kind of nice way to say. I mean, obviously, we're talking about something that's kind of very destructive, so it's hard to use the word nice. But the word mashtin bikir is extremely derogatory. The literal translation is someone that urinates against the wall, which many mafarshim understand to be a derogatory way to refer to the male descendants. That specifically when it's talking about maybe Rav, base Yeravam, if it's going to be against the whole household of Yeravam, specifically the male descendants, meaning it's going to be that eventually there are going to be no more even possibilities of people who become king from your household. It won't be you, it won't be your son, it won't be your grandson, it won't be anyone. There will be no male descendants. Some of Farshim understand Mashter here to be maybe even more derogatory, that it's actually talking about a dog, and that not saying anything negative about people who have dogs, but I'm saying that the destruction will be that not only will the whole household will be kind of destroyed, even the dogs, meaning it'll go that far. So right, so that's going to be all destroyed. Right, v'chrati l'yeravam mashtin bikir atzur v'azuv b'Yisrael. The phrase atzur v'azuv is a little bit of a challenging phrase to explain. One of the ways to explain it is the contrast of that which is private and that which is public. That there's, and it's a message of saying that there'll be no escaping, whether the wealth or the individuals are atzur, which is private, or atzuv, which is public, they will be, they're going to be included in this punishment. Uvi'arti acharei beis Yeravam. And there will be a bi'ur. A bi'ur is destroying after the household of Yeravam, but it's a destroying, as we're going to see kind of explained by the last phrase in the pasuk. Bi'ur is usually used when you destroy something to no end. If you think about when we use the word bi'ur, so the most famous place that we use the word bi'ur is in the context of chametz. That the idea is to literally destroy the chametz till it doesn't exist, either via means of fire, via means of scattering it into the ocean, so the crumbs they have no more of an existence. That's bi'ur. When the farmer would make his declaration that he took care of all of the tithes, it was called. He would said bi'arti hakodesh min habayis. I got rid of. There is nothing left. Everything that was supposed to be given to the Kohen, to the Levi, to the poor person, everything I got rid of. There's not even a morsel left in the house. So this is an idea that Yeravam's household is going to be nowhere. It's going to be totally destroyed. Kasher yevaer hagolol atumo. The two ways to understand. Kasher yevaer, just like the golol is destroyed, atumo, until, like, kind of completely destroyed. So the golol, it refers to both sides of the digestive system. Either it refers to, the first approach that the Radak says, it's a language of a tooth, a shein. So just like food, it's consumed by the mouth, by the teeth, till it like doesn't exist anymore. And gullah may also refer to the opposite end of the digestive tract, where that food could be consumed until it's full, just like food is consumed until there's waste. That is the extent that you are going to be destroyed. We went over a drop overtime, so we It's a terrible place to end because we're in the middle of a prophecy of doom. So if you want to miss next time, I understand. But we will continue with here next week.
If anybody wants to go in and meet Amy, I'm new executive director.